Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So now today I'm going to be talking about a book that I finished yesterday. I read it as an ebook and it's called The Peace War. No, it's not. It's called Marooned in Real Time. I had the wrong Goodreads page open there. Across Real Time number one is The Peace War, which I read about 10 years ago. And the reason I finally got around to reading the follow-up to that book 10 years later is pretty much because of, you know, me looking back, you know, 10 years after starting the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. What did I do at this first, you know, what was the first good book that I read? You know, what books did I enjoy early on and see what was there? And of course, Verna Vinge, The Peace War, I think I gave it like 4.5 stars at the time. Let me check. Yeah, that's what it says here on the sfbrp.com website. Across Real Time number one, I reviewed it 2008, April of 2008, and we're almost into April now, so almost exactly 10 years ago I read that book. Really enjoyed it and thought, well, I'll get to the second book at some point. At the time, I didn't listen to audiobooks and I didn't really read ebooks very much, so it was just sort of like, was it in the local bookshop? No, never really saw it around anywhere. And then I got more into listening to audiobooks and never found it, the Marooned in Real Time, the second book, the follow-up to The Peace War, as an audiobook. So I kind of just gave up, and then earlier this year I was just like, oh, let me just look. I've wanted to read that for literally 10 years now. Let me just get it as an ebook. I got it a few months ago and finally got around to reading it on this work trip that I'm on now at the moment. And yeah, so that was it. So I read it, and it was a bit weird reading the follow-up book to a book that I've read the first book to 10 years ago, because I'm sure there's some characters in here which were mentioned in the first book, but really I came to it completely fresh. However, I do remember thinking and kind of thinking about this for 10 years, what the second book could be about, because the setup for The Peace War is that there's been a big war. It was written in like early 80s. Actually, let me have a quick look. When The Peace War was written, first published in 1984, and the follow-up, Marooned in Real Time, 1986. So these are 1980s books, and they talk about, hey, what's going to be happening in the future, of course. That's what science fiction is about quite often. And this time, Verna Vinge says, well, there was a big war in 1997 which reduced the population of the entire world down to sort of, I think it says sort of like just a billion people or half a billion people, so, or 40 million people, I can't remember, but it's reduced down a lot. And then some university, I think in California or somewhere, I'm remembering back 10 years now to when I first read The Peace War. So what happens is there's this university, they discover this technology which is called the bubble, and what you can do is you can put this impenetrable force field around someone and or something at any size, and once you encompass someone in a bubble, there's no way in, no way out. They're just completely cut off from the entire rest of the world. And there's this authority called the Peace Authority, which comes out of some, I think, university administration group. They're like, right, no more wars. Anyone who's got a gun is going inside a bubble. And anyone who's got any weapons goes inside the bubble. But of course, it gets a bit more totalitarian than that. So it's like, anyone who disagrees with us is going inside a bubble. Now, that's all the, you know, being bubbled this and bubbled that and all that kind of stuff. But it's slight spoiler for that book. It turns out that you don't just go into a bubble. What happens is when the bubble pops, you come out again, and no time has passed at all for you inside the bubble, but, you know, 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, however many years the bubbles have been set for, they pop open and you're just back outside. In fact, I think that's not really a spoiler, because The Peace War opens with, I think, someone flying in a jet or something, and then going pop, and then suddenly he's outside of it again. It's like, oh no, I'm crashing or whatever. Anyway, I can't remember. So it turns out that if you bubble yourself up, you can, what's called, escape into the future. And the end of The Peace War, it kind of ends with this scene where people are going, ah, well, I'm going into the future, and we're all going to go into the future, and we're going to meet up at different times, and we're going to, you know, humanity is going to be spread across, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of years into the future, and we're going to do a deep dive into the future. Every time that we come out of the bubble, we'll have a look around and see if anything interesting happened, and if not, we'll get back in the bubble and continue on. into the future. Now, for 10 years, my mind has been thinking, all right, I know the next book is called Marooned in Real Time, so I've got a good feeling that this is going to be about whole communities of people or groups of people who are going to be heading into the future, and then one person is going to be left behind, and they're not going to have the technology to put themselves back in a bubble, but all their friends or everyone else who they're planning to meet up with in the future in a certain place in a certain time, they're all going to get there and go, hey, where's Ralph? Where's Nigel? Where's Sarah? Or whatever it's going to be. Oh, Sarah, did she not make it? And, of course, they're going to live out their entire life marooned in real time. This is the book that I had in my head. And that actually brings me to the book that I actually... That Verna Vinge wrote in 1986 and that I actually read now in 2018. It's kind of partly that book. That is part of it. There is one character who is marooned in real time. But again, that's not the main story. That's like a side story. And they discover this person's diaries, and that person, you know, is left behind. I can't remember, sort of like marooned for 100 years, but died partway into it. And reading through those diaries and things like that of what it's like to be stuck 50 million years into the future after most of humanity has died out and Earth is almost completely abandoned and everyone who's alive is just in bubbles, in and out of bubbles, going further and further into the future. So being stuck on Earth, not knowing if anyone's going to pop out of a bubble and find you, but everyone else who is human and alive is inside a bubble, not even noticing time is going past while you are living outside with all the different things that have happened 50 million years into the future, which is, you know, sort of like all the geography has changed, the geology, well, plate tectonics has gone, biology has gone on, there's whole new ecosystems, evolution has gone in different directions with, you know, different monkeys and dogs and insects and all of those kind of things. And that's all played out with the character reading through somebody else's diary. And of course, we get the diary and we get the summary of the diary and we get all of that. So that's the book, which I the name Marooned in Real Time made me think that's what the book, part of what the book was going to be about. But also what I had in my mind was sort of like, I really want to read what it's going to be like, you know, 10 years later, and then 100 years later, and then 1,000 years later, and then 10,000 years later, you know, keep going up in the powers of 10, up as you go through. And I thought we were going to get something like, you know, was it Last and First Men or something, as you keep going further and further into the future and getting this bigger and bigger and more interesting look at what might be happening throughout the future. And again, we did get a little bit of that. We do go at least 50 millions into the future, and we do hear about different stories about people using their time to go out into the wider galaxy and tour around the galaxy, because you can get a long way in 50 million years, even if you're going only 1/10 of the speed of light. If you no time passes for you inside a bubble from one place to another, you can get around pretty quickly. And we did get some other things about, you know, some singularity stuff, which has happened at some point as well, where technology has moved along. And we do get, like, hints at that, but it's all sort of just people telling their story. And I thought that would be, like, the main part of the book. Someone getting marooned in real time, and then, you know, lots of other stuff happening, accelerating into the future and seeing all the interesting stuff that happens along the way. The book started, though, and I realised, oh, that's not quite what we're getting. What we're going to get is the re-establishment of humanity and trying to create a society on Earth after 50 million in the future. It starts off, and in the book really pretty much says there's only 200 people alive left in the world because there was world wars and then some singularity and everyone was left behind, and only the people who accidentally got put forward in time are going to make it. And some people went forward in time intentionally. Some people were like, oh yeah, we made some investments and then we're going to come back in 200 years time and we're going to be rich. Or even if we're not rich, technological progress and all other kind of progress is going to be so far advanced that even us really poor people in the future, it's going to be way better for us and way more interesting for us to be that far in the future. And everyone who comes back after a certain point discovers that the world is empty. There's been some catastrophe or singularity. In fact, it's never really explained. Put it this way, it is explained in various different ways because different people have different ideas of what might have happened at that point, at around about, you know, 2,210 years AD, or CE, or however you want to say it. So, Yeah, so that's what the start of the story was. And I was like, oh, right, okay, so not many people made it, and we're going to kickstart a new society, and there's there's a big group of 100 extra people inside this bubble, and we're going to get them out of that bubble, and then we're going to bring together 300 people, and that's a big enough gene pool, and we've got enough technology. If we bring together all of the more advanced people who left later on when technology had advanced to a certain point, and all the people who are low-tech people who don't have the high technology, but they've got, you know, there's enough of them, we can start breeding and start repopulating the Earth. And I was like, oh, okay, so we're not going to get the deep dive into the future, but we're going to get the re-establishment of a culture, of a society, repopulating the Earth. That's what the story is going to be about. It turns out all the things that, all the things that I thought this book was going to be about, and all the styles of the book, and all the interesting writing that I thought Verna Vinge would do, all of that is there, but it all falls into the background to what the main thrust of the story is. Unfortunately, it's a murder mystery, and it follows a detective who is looking back through the diary of the person who's been abandoned, because they weren't abandoned by accident, there was some nefarious stuff going on there. So the person who was abandoned in real time, she is just left, and someone says, hey, I want you to work out who is the person who abandoned her in real time. Who is the one who changed the programs of the bubbles to cut her out and not be able to get her back in before she died? Of course, there's lots of long-life technology, so some people can live thousands of years in real time, even though their life is spread over millions of years and stuff like that. So, the story follows W.W. Brierson, who is, in his time, was a well-known detective, and then he was bubbled up into the future by someone shanghaied him. So one of his enemies, or someone who was prosecuting or trying to catch, thought, well, the best way to not be caught by this very good, Sherlock Holmes type. Well, it's not even a Sherlock Holmes type, but what happens is that after this guy gets shanghaied and sent into the future, his son... this is the detective. His son starts writing novels about him because he was someone who was quite famous in his time. And then he started writing novels about him. And then so people who meet him later on in the future go, "Ah, oh, you're the famous." It's a bit like meeting, Sherlock Holmes. If Sherlock Holmes was a real person and you only knew about him via the fictionalized novels about his detective skills and what he was get up to, written by Watson, or in this case, the son of Brierson. And like I say, unfortunately, we then just get murder mystery, and the murder mystery isn't very good. All of the stuff around the murder mystery I did enjoy, all of the action I did enjoy, all of the world building I did enjoy, but it falls down because the characters in this book just aren't very interesting or aren't very good, because they pretty much say right at the start, okay, we have 7 high-tech people and a few hundred low-tech people. And it's only the high-tech people the idea being that the closer you get to the singularity, the higher technology that you can take with you. So in our modern world, it's sort of like, yeah, someone going into the future with an iPhone 10 is going to have like more computing power on them than anyone who went just 10 years earlier. Because, if you go 10 years earlier and you can only have an iPhone 1 and someone else goes with an iPhone 10, it's sort of like, well, how much more data can you take with you? How much better is your camera? But then you just spread that all the way across all technologies. How much better is medical technology? And how much better is the data about this? And how much better is the data about that? And as, all technology accelerates, that the closer to the singularity that you are bubbled up and miss the singularity, the final singularity, the more high-tech you are. And a lot of the people came from, like, the late 21st century, some of them from the 22nd century, and the people who are right at the end of the 22nd century, beginning of the 23rd century, or am I getting the centuries mixed up? I can't remember exactly what centuries they are in the book. So only the highest tech people, the latest bubbled people, are going to be the murderers. So you think, oh, okay, so it's good that the pool of people, it's not suddenly like 300 people could have done the murder, or 200 people, or whatever it is. It's only 7 people, or 6 people, because then one of those was the one who was murdered, or marooned in real time. unfortunately, those people, none of them are that interesting. And all of them, it's said, oh, yes, all of them have, you know, have motives, and all of them have this, and, you know, and all of them, you know, could be the person who does it. But you're reading and going, well, it's okay, it's obviously not that person. It's obviously not that person. And I was like, well, it's either this person or that person. And then one of those dies. And you're like, okay, so it won't be that person. So I was just thinking, well, it must be either this person or that person. And again, I don't want to give it too much away. However, it was kind of given away, and the big twist of it being him reading through the person's diary who was marooned in real time and trying to find clues in there. As I was reading it through, I was like, well, I know the clue. Like, I spot the clue straight away. So I'm like, why does it take Sherlock Holmes? Or why is this other person who was spent, you know, they went out of the bubble and spent a long time reading the diary and analysing it, and, you know, there was 10 million words or 2 million words or however much it was, or like 10 novels worth of this person's diary that they wrote over decades and decades, talking about the past and who they thought might have killed them, but they never really mention that, but they hint at it, you know, because in case that other person who might find the diary and all that kind of stuff. But as I was reading through, I was just like, well, it's this person. And unfortunately, it was that person who I thought it was going to be. And that's kind of disappointing, because that's, in the end, what the whole novel became. It just became, who is the enemy? It's not really clear. They've got controls over some computer systems, but not others. They're going to fight this person. And if that person's fighting back, it can't be that person and stuff. In the end, the whole thing that this story became wasn't what... First, it wasn't what I wanted the story to be about. And then, because it was that, about not very interesting characters who weren't very distinguishable from each other, and the only thing that did distinguish them from each other is the reason why I thought, like, you know, the only thing that distinguished them was sort of like, oh, this person is this motive, and that person's motive is this motive, but it was never really any deeper than that. And I don't know, I didn't find the characters, like I say, if someone's going to be a villain and someone's not going to be a villain, and someone's going to be a suspect and someone's not going to be a suspect, it's just got to be written better than this. And I know it's difficult to say that, you know, you can't always have someone who is a, you know, an amazingly talented mystery, you know, murder mystery writer to write this kind of stuff. But coming off the back of, say, something like, what was a book that we read recently, which was a murder mystery? Let me just quickly sort this by episode number. Well, I guess, yeah, The Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov. It's a science fiction murder mystery, but it, first of all, it's a really good murder mystery, and second of all, it's a really good science fiction novel. Or, first of all, it's a really good science fiction novel, second of all, it's a really good murder mystery. But if your book is going to be a murder mystery, it has to hold up, and Marooned in Real Time just doesn't. It does hold up really well as a science fiction novel. Like, the science fiction ideas in it are really good. The being marooned in real time, the bubbles, the world building, the science, the technology, all of that kind of stuff. Even though there's a point that this was written, it says first published in 1986, it feels really modern, because the way that it talks about information technology is, like, it feels very modern. People go through with handheld devices with databases of information on them, and you're like, okay, that's what it would be like. Like, I do have an iPhone, and I know that if I've got a database with the world's, you know, with all of Wikipedia on there and all the world's information on there, like, I know that as the world goes on, that, you know, you get exponentially more and more and more information stored on a smaller and smaller device. I think that's, someone said that I saw a tweet that if you buy the new iMac Pro, you actually have more memory on your iMac Pro, if you buy one now, than all of the memory on all of the original Mac computers. Not just sort of like there's more memory, but if you get every single original Mac or Mac 2 or whatever the first Mac was, and you get all of the memory that was ever on all of those computers ever built, you buy one iMac Pro now, and it has more memory than all Macs ever built back in the 1980s and stuff like that. So when you think about it that way, Marooned in Real Time, I mean, Werner Vinge knows what he's talking about when he's talking about, you know, the growth of technology. And actually, I was very impressed by this, but then he has an author's note at the very end of the book. Let me just look this up on the Kindle app on my phone. So he even says something about, oh, right, oh, yeah, yeah. The author's afterwards, here's where I explain, that's where he explains what he was trying to say with the previous 100,000 words. He says, the apology is for the unrealistically slow rate of technological growth predicted. Part of that is reasonable, I suppose. A general war, like the one I put in 1997, can be used to postpone progress from anywhere from 10 years to forever. But what about the recovery? And so he kind of explains why he wanted to have, like, a really slow recovery from a war, and then it ramping up, and like, the rate of technology ramping up again and again and again and again. And it's sort of like, he pretty much says, sorry, I needed civilization to last long enough to hang a plot on it. And yes, of course, that's, I totally understand that. But like I say, this book works even in 2018 because he did extrapolate out kind of information technology and other technologies, not in a realistic way in terms of timescale or even the technologies involved, but in a way which is understandable to someone who is now in 2018 looking at their iPhone, thinking back to 2008 when they've read the first book in this series. And, you know, the iPhone, I guess, had just come out in 2008. I was listening to podcasts on a little, you know, MP3 player, which wasn't even an iPod at the time. Well, I might have got an iPod by then. I'm not even sure. But, yeah, pretty crazy, that pace of change. And that's kind of really well dealt with by Verna Vinge, which, to be honest, you should expect from someone who wrote these other novels, his Zones of Thoughts novels, The Fire Upon the Deep, etc., where he talks about those things as well. So, yeah, like I say, this is, like, a really, really good science fiction novel exploration of the technologies inside of it and the rate of change and all the, you know, the deep time aspect of it, let down by a very mediocre murder mystery central plot, which I really didn't want to be the main story, but it turned out to be the main story, and I didn't find it interesting. And I didn't find the characters who were suspects or very interesting. The person who was marooned in real time, really enjoyed that part of the story. Like, all of the other stuff that was going on, really enjoyed that. But I was kind of just disappointed that W.W. Bryerson was our main character, and all he was doing was, like, reading stuff and thinking about stuff and trying to work out who the murderer was. And I was like, yeah, but all this other interesting stuff's going on over here, and if we'd have looked at this other character, these other characters went into space. Why can't this be a story about the person going around space and going into bubbles and coming out, and we get a little bit of her story, but not enough of it? And what about these other people who are over there? Why don't we get that story? The other weird thing that I found about this story is the assumed politics of that kind of, like, the, you know, libertarian slash, you know, no government slash anarchist kind of thing is the default position and should be, like, it's just obviously the thing that is going to happen. Sort of like, yes, it happened once before, and then in the future it's just going to keep going back to the libertarian ideal. And I did notice this a bit in the Peace War, but in this one it's kind of just, it's so just, like, assumed, sort of like in such an offhanded way. It's sort of like, yes, well, of course the future world is going to be, you know, anarchist, libertarian, whatever. Because why would we need a government? Because, you know, of course everything is just going to trend towards smaller and smaller government. It even talks about the disgovernance of this and the the unstatement, or whatever happens. It just keeps going on that, well, of course people are just going to pay for the police and pay for the government and pay for all these services. It's just going to become so much, of course it's going to be private industry which is going to provide all of these things, that the government is just not going to have a job anymore. And it's I know, if feel kind of quaint that it's just sort of like there, written in the 1980s, of like, well, of course the government's going to become smaller and smaller and smaller, and private enterprise is going to take over, and in the end you're just not going to need anything. People are just going to, you know, get insurance and pay in for police and pay in for, you know, you're not going to need a fire department, because, you know, if anything catches fire, I guess you can just bubble it up. I'm not even sure what the idea is in that way, but of course, that's all way in the past, and when you've only got 300 people doing it. But yes, there's even, like, a faction of people who come from the state, and a faction that come from the who are the old peace authority, and then you've got the unguvs, and the unguvs are just the people who don't have a government, who haven't signed up to a government. And yeah, it just feels that, like, the whole political thing feels kind of quaint. Yes. What else do I want to say? Not really sure. I think that's it, actually. This could have been a five-star book, but only if it was the book that I wanted it to be. But the book that I wanted it to be was in there. It felt like the story that I wanted this to be, that story was in there, but it was kind of pushed to the background. And all the technology stuff that I wanted was in there, and all this other stuff was in there. I said, just let down by a not very convincing murder mystery. And that all failed because the main suspects weren't interesting. And I never, first of all, didn't really care about any of their motivations. And if I did care about their motivations, they were just kind of explained to me. You didn't spend any time with them, sort of seeing what they were doing. And a lot of it is based on, oh, secret identity. And it's sort of like, well, if these people have secret identities, like, it's very difficult to know who that past identity was going to be, especially if it was literally 50 million years ago. And what could they possibly kind of bring forward from 50 million years ago? One thing I did actually like about those characters was the idea that the people who lasted and got 50 million years downstream in the time, they're all kind of a bit broken and not all together there. That was an interesting part of it, actually. Sort of like, oh, this person had this really strange personality, which means that she focused on this. And this person had a really strange personality, which means he focused on that kind of thing to the exclusion of all else. And, you know, even though this person has lived 9,000 years and they've lost a lot of humanity, they're trying to regain their humanity. Again, that kind of exploration was interesting, but it did make them even more difficult to understand, considering that these were the people who were the main suspects. That were sort of like, well, if they're hardly human anymore, how can I understand their human motivations? If their motivations are so out there and wacky that you have to have lived 1,000 years spread over 1,000 subjective years spread over 50 million years, like, it's going to be even more difficult. We should have spent much more time with those people to work out who they were and what their motivations might have been. And then maybe, if there had been a murder and you could bring in an investigator or an inspector, bring him in and, bring him in, and that's, and then we could really play with it. But you can't really bring that person in at the start and then him spend a lot of time sitting by himself reading a book, interviewing each of these really interesting characters once, and then, you know, it even says at one point, it's sort of like, oh, it only happens in the stories that you ever get all of your suspects together into one room and then explain out what was going on and hope it turns out well. That's not very realistic, is it? That hardly ever happens. And I'm like, don't tell me that's not very realistic and unsatisfying and not very, and doesn't happen very often, and then do it in the book. I mean, there is a little bit of cleverness to it, but not any more clever than you would expect from any Agatha Christie, you know, Murder on the Nile or Orient Express or any of those other kind of things where you're all like, oh, okay, this is actually, you know, twists in, of course, now, because they're so well-known stories, it's so obvious, but I don't know. Of all the things that you could be doing with such a fantastic science fiction premise, the way that the murder mystery wraps up, not very interesting. I keep pushing on that point. But, again, it's just the only thing that lets the book down, or one of the only things that lets the book down, but it's so central to what the book is that there's just no way around it. Like I say, it could have been a five-star book. In the end, I'm going to give it 3 stars, which isn't very good for a Verna Vinge book. Let me go across and check out what I have given previous Verna Vinge books. Let's find it here. Oh, no, can't find it. Verna Vinge, The Peace War, I gave 4.5 stars. Rainbow's End, which was a very good book, 4.2 stars. A Fire Upon the Deep, 4.5 stars. And then Children of the Sky, 2 stars. So yeah, at least it's not as bad as Children of the Sky. But I didn't enjoy it as much as The Peace War, even though I think this was the Hugo Award nominated one or winner or something. Or this one's the one that's more, or better received. I guess it could actually be read, if you are interested in this book and not interested in The Peace War, this could be read just as a standalone book. It does kind of make me want to go back and read The Peace War, and maybe 10 years ago Luke was more impressed by this kind of stuff. But I just remember it being a bit more exciting. You know, there's wars and, you know, chases. There's still quite a lot of scenes from The Peace War which really stick with me. And in this book, I think the only parts of the story that are going to stick with me are the diary of the person who was marooned in real time and maybe one or two other little bits. I don't see this book sticking with me a long time, unlike other books, which people go deep into the future. So let's give this 3 stars. Yes. What else do I say? Yeah, you can follow me. I was going to say you can get this book on Audible, but you can't. It's not on there. Or not on the Audible store that I use. Otherwise, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there. Follow me on Instagram. I'm at Luke Burridge there too. Follow along with my vlogging of this current trip that I'm on. If you're interested in what I was getting up to in the Gambia and Senegal, you can check that on YouTube. Or go to YouTube/Luke Burridge. I think that gets me there. The best thing to do, though, is go over to goodreads.com. Become my friend there so I can see what you think about this book. Oh, that's what I want to do, actually. Yeah, let's go here. So you can be like, John, so far pretty good. I'm really liking Verna Vinge. I came across him from Luke Barrage, as it's spelling written there, of the Science Fiction Book Podcast, Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. Tudor rated it 5 stars as well. Only 300 humans left on Earth, a murder mystery across 50 million years, a meditation on deep time and evolution, on civilization and intelligence. What more could you want? A very good book. I would want, if it is going to be a murder mystery across 50 million years, it should last 50 million years. Well, I guess it does in a way. Ray Siskon rated it 5 stars. Robert, 5 stars. Greg, 5 stars. Rick, 5 stars. Lots of 5 stars going down to Sean O'Hara rated it 3 stars, and then lots of people who marked it as too red. So yeah, check it out, because I always like to see what you think of a book, and it's really easy if you're my friend. 38 friends of mine, pretty much one time, or so as current SFBRP listeners have liked this book. It's actually very highly rated, 4.08 stars on Goodreads overall. Much better rated, actually, slightly better rated than The Peace War, which is 3.96, so actually, yeah, both around about 4 stars. So yeah, become my friend there, and also, if you want me to read a book, go to the Books I Would Like to See Reviewed thread on the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads. Pop your suggestion there. If anyone else says, hey, yeah, I think Luke should read that too, I pretty much get to those books straight away. So if you recommend something and someone backs it up and also says I should read it, I'll probably get to it pretty quickly. All right, that's a lot from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and catch you next time.